As I mentioned last week, we begin the sixth chapter of the Gospel of John. The Gospel of John is one that's full of signs, full of meanings, symbolism, very high, complex theology, if you will. But over the next 4 or 5 Sundays, the main theme is going to be Jesus Christ's message as far as how he sees himself. If we want to learn how to relate to Jesus, we need to ask the question, who does Jesus say that he is, firstly? And who does Jesus say that he is? In John, there are 7 strong statements of who Jesus says he is. 7 I am statements. You know many of them already. I am the good shepherd. I am the light. I am the way. And today we hear another one. I am the bread of life. It's very significant that we pay attention to these words, I am, because in the Old Testament, there's one being who would use them, and that was God himself. You might remember Moses in the burning bush. Lord, who should I tell him? Who should I tell the Pharaoh sent me? And Yahweh says, tell them that I am sent to you. So the first century Jewish men and women paying attention to these words from Jesus saying, I am, so frequently, would certainly have been reminded of this encounter of Moses with Yahweh. I am the bread of life. Now, if you remember last week's gospel, Jesus multiplied the bread, multiplied the fish. And today in the first reading, we hear how this happened in the Old Testament. How the Father in heaven gave them bread from heaven, the manna. And so Jesus is saying, it's not Moses who gave you this bread, but my Father in heaven. It's also implied what Jesus just did there. Because first he feeds them bread, and then he tells them that in the Old Testament, God gave them bread. So what does that make Jesus? Again, there's something about his power, something about his person that is appealing to all these people. So he just finished the multiplication of the bread. He crosses the lake, makes his way to the other side, and there's a bunch of people there. There are particularly 2 groups. The first group is all those people who were fed by bread moments ago, and then there's all the people who heard what he had done. The first group wants some more bread. Wants another freebie, another lunch. The second group wants to witness a miracle. And that's when Jesus brings into account this way of relating to himself of the new bread. People ask him, well, what must we do to get that bread? Of course, they were still thinking of literal bread, the bread Jesus just gave them. What do we need to do to get that bread that is life? And Jesus responds, whoever comes to me will never hunger. Whoever believes in me will never thirst. I am the bread of life. Now pay attention to the verbs. Always pay attention to the verbs that Jesus uses. Whoever comes to me and believes in me. He didn't just say whoever believes in me. That faith needs to be active. I cannot believe in Jesus like I believe in Yemen. That belief has to inform me in some way. It compels me to come, to go to Jesus. To believe in Jesus is to work to increase that belief in him by the grace of the Spirit. We manifest that in our actions. That's the power of grace compelling us to conversion. St. Paul puts it this way in the second reading. You should put away the old self of your former way of life, corrupted through deceitful desires, and renewed in the spirit of your minds, and put on the new self created in God's way in righteousness and holiness of truth. Put away the old self and put on the new self. Keep that in mind. What could our old self be? What could our new self be? Now, Jesus is speaking about bread. But the bread he's talking about is different than the bread of the Eucharist, the bread of the Last Supper. There is no table, and there are many elements that differ. Of course, the bread he talks about will eventually lead to the bread of the Last Supper, the Eucharist. Jesus is foreseeing that. But the bread he's talking about now is not exactly the Eucharist. So there's another bread. And here's a key. We can see it in the Mass. In the Mass, there is the bread of the Word, the table of the Word, and the bread, the table of the Eucharist. The bread that Jesus is talking about is his message. The bread that Jesus is talking about is his message. What is his message? He is his message. I am the bread of life. The messenger and the message are one in Jesus Christ. Think of it this way. If the bread of life that Jesus is talking about is the Word, what effect can the Word have in our lives, the Word of Jesus? So I'm going to lay out an example. It's 12:17. And if I tell you, do not think of a Belgian waffle. Warm and crispy. Do not think of butter melting slowly on top of it. Do not think of strawberries or blueberries over the waffle. Do not think of bacon on the side, sizzling and crispy. Do not think about what that would taste like. Something happened. Something happened in you, in your mind. Probably even in your body, your stomach started grumbling. My words, the words of a man, transformed you in a way. You conceived them in your mind, and you embodied them. Your mouth probably even started watering. If that is the power that human words have to transform human beings, what could the power of Christ, the power of the Word of Christ, do to us? If we listen to them, if we chew on them, on this bread of life that he offers us. So there are two breads. There's the bread of the Word and the bread of the Eucharist. Eventually, one leads to the other. The bread of the Word leads us to the bread of the Eucharist. But it begins by acknowledging the message of Christ, by listening to it, by accepting it, and by striving to live by it. Probably the hardest one. There was a man, the most renowned British journalist at the end of the last century, called Malcolm Muggeridge. He was a strong social critic for the movements going on in the 60s, 70s, and early 80s. You remember some of them: sexual revolution, make love, not war, this kind of just you take your own joy and pleasure into your hands, throw down institutions. And in 1982, he wrote an article in the Times called Why I Converted to Catholicism. He was 80 years old when he converted. And he writes about this, especially in an encounter with a person that we'll talk about. There are many things that called him over to our faith. The first one, he says, was that the church is one of the only few remaining institutions that really takes action and compassion actively on the poor. It's one of the few institutions who strive to live mercifully and save, preach to the poor. The second reason, he says, is the uninterrupted permanence of the church throughout the centuries. So Malcolm saw that there were heresies, there were wars, there were schisms, and yet the church kept on going. This is what he says. The church must be in God's hands, because seeing the people who have run it, it couldn't possibly have gone on existing if there weren't some help from above. There has to be some divine assistance to this. There was another thing that attracted him. Amidst the whole sexual revolution, he anticipated that this couldn't be the right path. And along those years, the church released an encyclical, a formal document on the teachings of Christ, entitled Humanae Vitae, on human life. In this document, the church warns against the divorce, the separation of sexuality from love, from dignity, from life. The church warns against the use of contraceptives and abortions. And that pulled Malcolm so strongly to the faith that he started studying more. Of course, we cannot see our body as an object for a hobby. We cannot see our bodies as something that we have to use for our own purposes. Everything we are is made in the image and likeness of God. There is a dignity that must be respected. And that brought him even closer to the faith. Then, part of his journaling work, he decided to do a documentary on the life and work of Mother Teresa of Calcutta. So he went to Calcutta, lived with her, worked with her. And he said that his conversion took place in three stages. The first stage, he says, was horror. Horror at the sights, the smells, and the sounds of the hospice. It was a state of repulsion. The second stage, he says, was compassion. Learning to see the suffering men and women as having a dignity. And the third one, something that he says, had never experienced before, was the awareness that the lepers and the sick before him were not pitiable, repulsive, or forlorn, but rather dear and delightful, as it might be friends, brothers, and sisters. He saw how Mother Teresa embodied the message of Christ, how she embodied the bread of life, the bread of the word, and its ultimate consequences. He saw how this woman was living the message of Christ, eating of the bread of life, eating of the bread of the word in her thoughts and in her actions. And that was the last straw for him to convert to Catholicism, fully into our faith, 80 years old. I said that the bread of the word leads us to the bread of the Eucharist. And Malcolm saw this also in Mother Teresa. This is what he says. It is impossible to be with her, to listen to her, to observe what she is doing and how she is doing it without being in some degree converted. Her total devotion to Christ, her conviction that everyone must be treated, helped, and loved as if he were Christ himself. Mother Teresa had shared with me in Calcutta how communion every morning kept her going. Without it, she would falter and lose her way. How, then, could I turn my back on this spiritual nourishment? It's now the bread of the Eucharist that he's talking about. You know, some people, it's very common to come up to priests and ask them, "Well, Father, why is it that I cannot receive Holy Communion because of my marriage situation? Why is it that the church pushes us away and rejects us?" And there's not a lot of truth to that. The church doesn't push us away. But if we understand that to receive Christ in sacramental communion is a sign of being in communion with the teachings of Christ, I have to be in communion with both. For me to accept the body of the Eucharist is firstly to accept the body of the Word. I cannot say I accept Jesus' real presence in the Eucharist, but I deny these teachings of his. The body of the Eucharist cannot contradict the body of the Word. The way around that, the way to work on that, is not, I'll just forget this part of the teachings of Jesus that makes me uncomfortable, that I really don't want to work on, that doesn't adapt to what I want, and I'll just receive his holy body in the Eucharist. That would be a contradiction. We would incapacitate ourselves to receive the body of Christ because we're not receiving the bread of life and the word. Communion with the Eucharist is a sign of communion with the teachings of Christ. They're linked. Jesus is the message. The message is Jesus. He is the bread of life, the bread of the word and the bread of Eucharist. So, Father, what are you saying? I'm saying that we need to lean into the teachings of Christ and confront them with our conscience. Chew on them. Is it easy teachings? No. We know that. We know it's not easy. But we need to encounter our conscience with the Word of God, with the bread of the Word, and work through it. Mary can show us the humility and the wisdom to find the teachings of Christ in the bread of the Word, that they may take us to the bread of the Eucharist. It is this bread of putting on the new creation, the new Christ, the new man, leaving the old man behind and putting on something new, something marvelous. Probably a man, a woman that you had never been before, vested with the very image and love of Jesus Christ. Sacred Heart of Jesus.